From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Edson. We're taking a look at toxic environments this week, places where poisonous chemicals are so deadly they can devastate a town. We'll visit a few places like that this hour. One thing they all have in common: the people in these towns are overwhelmingly Black, brown, and poor. Racist attitudes and cheap land create the conditions that polluting industries take advantage of and the government neglects. We'll start in Columbus, Mississippi, where Arthur Parker lives just down the street from a field where a factory used to be. He's had trouble with his backyard.
No trees or nothing. Every time we plant something, it will die.
And he says many of the people on the street have been sick.
One of my neighbors down here, Mr. Malone, he had cancer. And he died maybe about 4 years ago. It's a lot of them on the street that had cancer.
The Parkers noticed an oily substance in the soil of their backyard. And they weren't the only ones. Sharon Lerner, an investigative reporter with the online news site The Intercept, went to Columbus to learn more about what was in the dirt.
Reverend Steve Jameson is the pastor of the Maranatha Faith Center, a church not far from Arthur Parker's house. In 1999, Reverend Jameson began digging to secure the foundation to expand the church. He came across little gooey beads that bubbled up in the soil.
We realized that we could not get rid of this black jelly-looking substance. The deeper we dug, the more we saw of it.
Reverend Jameson didn't know what the jelly-looking stuff was, but there was a factory about a quarter mile down the road that belonged to a company called Kerr McGee. It was a giant energy and chemical company. It's perhaps best known for operating the nuclear facility where Karen Silkwood was poisoned by plutonium. Reverend Jameson had never seen the movie about Karen Silkwood, and he didn't know what the plant made. He called the factory, and they sent a manager over who told him that whatever was in the dirt wasn't dangerous. A few weeks later, Kerr McGee sent a cleanup crew to Reverend Jameson's site.
When they came over with backhoes and about 15 workers, all dressed in hazmat. So I'm thinking, now you just told me that this was not a bad product and it wouldn't hurt me, but your men are wearing hazmat suits. At that point in time, I stopped them, and our lawyer got involved, and that's how the thing got started.
Kerr McGee's lawyers got involved, too, and the company and the pastor battled for years over what turned out to be creosote. Creosote is a tarry mixture of more than 200 chemical compounds. The company had used it for decades to coat railroad ties, and a lot of it had seeped into the soil. The EPA classifies creosote as a probable human carcinogen. It's also associated with a range of health problems, including kidney and liver troubles and chemical burns. While the court battle dragged on, the spot where the pastor had dug remained open on the church property. In 2007, the city covered it over with concrete. After it was covered, Kerr McGee insisted that there was no creosote on the property, but Reverend Jameson wasn't convinced.
Kerr McGee had gone to court on this process and said, "Your Honor, we have cleaned their property up. There's no creosote on that property." And so I kept saying, yes, there is. It's under that concrete.
Reverend Jameson felt if he could look under the concrete, he could prove there was still creosote in the soil.
So I said, we have to hire somebody else to make sure we can do this. So we went and found Tenny out of Jackson.
My name is Tenny White. I'm 58 years old. I'm a little short African-American lady.
Tenny White owned a small environmental testing lab in Jackson. She'd been performing and analyzing tests on water and soil for dozens of years and could make sense of the reports that Kerr McGee was presenting in court.
She knew what numbers and what things to look for, so she could read the reports. And she said, "Oh, no, you skewed this number, or you put a decimal point here when it should have been there."
The city told Reverend Jameson not to move the concrete on his property. Tenny said he should, to prove the creosote was there.
I get my backhoe, get in that ditch, pull in, nothing but creosote.
A huge pile of black, shiny, tarry creosote sitting right there on Reverend Jameson's property where everybody told him it wasn't.
Tenny's work with Reverend Jameson ultimately led the Environmental Protection Agency to declare 90 acres around Kerr McGee's plant in Columbus a Superfund site. The victory also inspired Tenney and Reverend Jameson to travel around the Deep South, helping other people struggling with environmental contamination. They started the Coalition of Communities for Environmental Justice in 2009.
We coined the phrase, Mississippi Still Burning, because everywhere we went and looked, we saw Hattiesburg, we saw it in Ocean Springs, we saw it in Grenada. The government had been made aware of all these situations, but was doing nothing about it.
Tenney found the situation in Hattiesburg particularly heartbreaking. That's where Kerr McGee operated their Gulf States creosote plant.
I went to a community meeting in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, and these women talked about losing their babies. They talked about miscarriages. They talked about stillborn babies. They talked about losing babies in their first year of life. This was their reality.
It was increasingly clear to Tenney that there was another element to the problem. She researched environmental cleanups around the state, and she says the better-off whiter communities tended to be treated differently.
There was a creosote site in Wiggins, Mississippi that got cleaned up in a year. But they can't clean up Columbus or Hattiesburg in two decades.
In 2009, she wrote a series of blunt, angry letters to the head of the EPA in Washington, Mississippi's Department of Environmental Quality, and the state attorney general, making the case that poor Black communities were treated unjustly. Heather Sanchez is a graduate student who in 2008 was writing her master's thesis about the coalition that Reverend Jameson and Tenney formed.
You can't forget the first time you meet Tenney White. You could just tell she knew her stuff.
Heather saw Tenney explain the creosote problem to the Hattiesburg City Council.
She left the room speechless, you know, because her presentation led me at least to believe that it was very clear what had happened in that community. That, you know, an industry came in and they polluted and they didn't clean up.
Tenney's activism didn't pay well. Sometimes it didn't pay at all.
They met in a church, so they would pass the plate around from time to time, and they would all give what they could to Tenney, and that's how she would work.
Tenney and Reverend Jameson listened to people's complaints, explained technical terms, and told residents about similar situations in other towns.
Instead of just one community talking about their problems, they came together as like, here we are, three communities living different parts of the state, all facing the same types of problems. And I think when they showed up in number like that and they had the science and the data to back it up, people had to listen.
Reverend Jameson began to worry that Tenney might be getting too much attention.
We tried to get Tenney to calm down. She was very passionate. I said, Tenney, you're fighting some big, big boys here. Let's take it one at a time. But she was all over the state.
Reverend Jameson was clearly worried that Tenney would get herself into trouble. But even he was surprised about what happened next. It was the summer of 2009, and an EPA special investigator showed up at Tenney's lab. He wanted to talk about some tests she'd been hired to do. The investigator visited a second time, and the agency eventually accused her of making up the test results. When Reverend Jameson heard about this, he felt the explanation was simple.
I think she was set up, because she was putting pressure in all the right places.
But the charges against Tenney turned out to be anything but simple.
Tenney, you there?
I'm here.
This call is from a federal prison.
The EPA, along with the Department of Justice, charged Tenney with fabricating test results and lying to federal investigators. In 2013, Tenney was convicted and sentenced to 40 months in federal prison. We talked about her case in 15-minute phone conversations spread out over several months. She explained that it all hinged on work she'd done for one company, BorgWarner, which makes car parts. State regulations required the company to test its wastewater for metals, and they'd hired Tenney to do the testing. The company said Tenney hadn't supplied all the data she was supposed to and reported her to the EPA.
What trouble were you causing EPA, do you think?
Well, I was kind of going over EPA Region 4's head and going to Washington, D.C. and making kind of a stink about what had happened at Columbus when the Southeast region was already aware of it and had been aware of it for some years. And what they could tell me about it later was, well, you know, Columbus was just one of those places that fell through the cracks. And I contend that was a pretty big crack.
She'd been going after the EPA, but now they were coming after her. I asked BorgWarner for an interview several times, and they declined. But at the trial, several of their employees testified that the reports Tenney turned into the company, called DMRs, were based on fabricated data. Tenney denied this, but couldn't back up her claim. She says the hard drive where she stored the data had crashed.
They subpoenaed my hard drive. When we asked for a copy of the hard drive, they subpoenaed something I couldn't even search.
Tenney's lawyers argued that the tests had no environmental consequence, and later tests showed no excess metals in the water. The prosecutors didn't dispute that fact, so it wasn't clear why she landed in court, let alone prison. I called the EPA many times in the hope that I might get someone to address these questions on tape. I never did, but I did speak to Doug Parker. He's a former EPA official who was in charge of the agency's criminal division during Tenney White's investigation and prosecution. He was familiar with the case, but didn't know all the details. He told me the EPA ranks its criminal investigations.
For example, if a case involved a death or serious bodily injury, it was automatically at the top.
So I asked him why Tenney's case was prosecuted if it involved no environmental harm. When I reminded Doug that Tenney was sentenced to more than 3 years, he acknowledged that her punishment was unusually harsh.
It's a significant sentence and is not one that I would expect for that.
But he said that Tenney wasn't the only person who had been charged with falsifying DMRs and that it's crucial that lab owners be held to a high standard.
If you don't have that level of honesty and accurate reporting, the whole environmental compliance structure can potentially crumble.
The average sentence of people convicted by the government of criminal environmental offenses is 18 months in prison. Tenney got 40. And remember Kerr McGee, the company that had polluted Reverend Jameson's churchyard? Turns out his was one of thousands of sites across the country it had polluted with creosote and other hazardous materials. So what happened to them? It gets a little complicated. Kerr McGee tried to avoid responsibility for the pollution by spinning off a new company and making that company responsible. The rest of Kerr McGee was now profitable and was bought by yet another company called Anadarko. Still with me? Anadarko did end up having to pay $5 billion to clean up the polluted sites. That sounds like a lot of money, but it was just a fraction of what the communities calculated they needed. Executives, meanwhile, made millions, and in one case, hundreds of millions of dollars in the deal. But none of them faced any criminal charges. So I asked Doug Parker why Tenney White served time when the chemical company executives walked free.
It is hard when it's laid out like that to reconcile that.
Kerr McGee no longer exists, so it couldn't respond to this story. But during their legal battle with Reverend Jameson, the company issued a statement that said, "Our environmental performance has been nationally recognized for environmental responsibility, and our plants operate safely and have not harmed anyone." I thought of one other person who might be able to explain why Tenney landed in prison. Robert Wilson was the BorgWarner Environmental Health and Safety Manager who had hired Tenney to do those tests back in 2008. Though his name came up more than 100 times during the trial, neither the prosecution nor the defense called him to the stand. I wondered why. Robert now lives in LaGrange, Georgia.
I arrived to the trial, and they took me off to a small room where I sit for 3 different days.
Robert told me the prosecutors had interviewed him about the case and told him that they might want him to testify, but he waited in a little room at the courthouse and was never called to the stand. He was allowed to watch the end of the trial from the courtroom, though.
I'm amazed at the lawyers they sent from the Justice Department out of Washington, D.C., and all the trouble they went to prosecute a small-time little black businesswoman in Jackson, Mississippi. You don't bring that much firepower if you're going to be stepping on ants. Somebody wanted Tenney put away and out of their hair.
It seemed pretty clear why the prosecution might not have wanted the jury to hear Robert's take on Tenney. He had worked with her for years.
She was great to work with. She was the epitome of professional, and her knowledge of the OSHA statutes and environmental law was impeccable.
Robert was friendly with White and knew she'd been helping poor communities take on polluters.
I even tried to warn her at that time that you need to watch yourself because these people don't play. You have the possibility of causing them multi-million dollars in lawsuits and expenses, and Tenney, they'll come after you with a sledgehammer.
Robert said he couldn't be 100% sure that Tenney had provided the water testing data because he left the job shortly after the test results would have arrived. From an environmental standpoint, though, he felt the test didn't matter.
It's almost a no harm, no foul thing. That's why I still don't understand to this day why they went after Miss White. There wasn't even a great potential for any type of damage to the environment at all.
And he couldn't imagine why Tenney wouldn't have performed the tests.
What is her motivation for risking her whole career and reputation for a $150 test? That makes no sense to me whatsoever.
I took Tenney's case to environmental attorney Victor Yannicone to get his opinion. Yannicone led legal crusades against Agent Orange and the pesticide DDT. He also helped start the Environmental Defense Fund. I wanted to know what he thought about the government's decision not to call Robert Wilson to the stand.
He could have pointed out to the jury that the tests were not the basis for any compliance or regulatory action.
Yannicone also questioned why Tenney's lawyers never mentioned that she was an activist during the trial.
Of course the attorney should have introduced the fact she was an environmental activist and an environmental advocate for her community.
I was never able to talk to Tenney's defense attorneys. I called and emailed them several times to ask if they would speak to me about this case, but they declined. After more than a year of corresponding and talking to her on the phone, I finally met Tenney in person. In June of 2015, she was released after serving 27 months of her sentence. Her son, Troy, and I went to pick her up at the Federal Correctional Institute in Tallahassee. The first thing she wanted to do as a free woman was get a real cup of coffee. She was in good spirits.
Nothing has happened to me that was really life-threatening, you know. They didn't manage to kill me. They couldn't shoot me. They couldn't eat me.
She didn't seem cowed by the experience.
Their objective was to shut me up. I will not be shut up.
While she was in prison, Tenney lost the lab building she owned. She also lost the licenses she needs to operate it. As a convicted felon, it'll be tough to find a job. But she plans to keep doing exactly what she was doing before.
I found out that the best thing that I can do is simply tell the story. You don't need a license to tell the story. I honestly believe I need to finish what I start.
Tenney now lives in Jackson, Mississippi, with her son, daughter-in-law, grandchild, and a dog. She recently began advising people on how to deal with contamination on a nearby plot of land.
Sharon Lerner is an investigative reporter with the online news site The Intercept. You can find a link to her story at revealnews.org. One county in rural Alabama was the heart of a new chemical industry in the 30s, and the toxic legacy has nearly wiped the community off the map.
I've been living in this mess all my life, and I'm 67 years old. All my life I've been living here. I lived around the corner. I was born and raised around the corner there. I've been living in this. It's just probably waiting on us for all us to die out, because everybody is gone just right out in here.
That and what a weakened EPA could mean for minorities. Next on Revealed.